Hello and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. While you're waiting until participant joining, you can use the chat box and tell us from where you're connecting to our event. All right. Good afternoon. Hope you all have a good day. My name is Parisa Davoudi. I am a host of today, and let us start the webinar of implication of changing consumer demand on the value chain today. Our host is Lead Network, and it's a collaboration of Sales and Buying Chapter and Supply Chain Chapter. Our hosting companies are Kraft Heinz, Michaels, and Unilever. My name is Parisa Davoudi. I am your moderator today, and I am Supply Chain Portfolio and Innovation Lead at Unilever. I'm also part of the Event and Education Committee of Supply Chain Chapter in Lead Network. Before we start, let us do a little bit of housekeeping. At this moment, your audio working. I assume you can hear us. If not, try via phone to dial in. You are on the listen-only mode, but we want to have an interactive session. So feel free to share your comments or question at the Q&A button. We try to give an answer to you by end of the session. As a reminder, in all of the Lead Network events, we have an antitrust policy that I shortly let you read it. Avoid to discuss and talk about topics that are breaching the antitrust law. Now, let me introduce you to a little bit about Lead Network. Especially, I welcome our new members who are joining us for the first time. Just to remind you about our vision and mission, Lead Network is to attract, retain, and advance women in the retail and consumer good industry in Europe through education, leadership, and business development. It is our vision that a diverse workplace where both men and women are enabled to contribute their full potential, create value to their organization. Also in today's webinar, we are focusing on a very relevant topic that everybody is involved. It's COVID pandemic and how the normal life and normal behavior changed and is new. So specifically, shopper behavior has changed and this accelerated the value chain structure. In this webinar, we will talk about how companies shifted their strategy to embrace these changes and get to more sustainable value chain. With that, I would like to introduce our wonderful speakers, and I ask Claire to start to introducing herself, and then we start our fantastic topic. Claire, can I ask you to start, please?
Thank you, Parisa, and good afternoon, everybody. It's great to be here. Just by way of introduction, my name is Claire Wright. I'm a partner here at Deloitte, and I specialize in the consumer goods industry and all things sales and marketing related. I'm a brand manager by background, so I did my brand management training with Procter & Gamble, and also did brand roles for GSK Consumer and Kimberly Clark, and then have over 16 years experience in consulting, working across the consumer goods industry to support CPGs in helping them to align their commercial operating model to capitalize on growth. I'm also the people and purpose lead inside Deloitte for our private sector industry team. And amongst other things, that means that I'm responsible for overseeing the development of our senior grades, so our senior manager, director, and partner grades. But also I'm really passionate about accelerating our diversity agenda and making sure that we are injecting diversity into the way we recruit, develop, and sponsor our people as we go forward. So really delighted to be here today. And I'm going to hand over to David.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I'm David Shaw. I'm the Supply Chain and ESG Director here at Kraft Heinz. I've been with Kraft Heinz for about 6 years, and similarly to Claire, actually, I started my career at Procter & Gamble with 9 years there. I'm a little bit poacher turned gamekeeper, or actually gamekeeper turned poacher turned gamekeeper, having started my career in supply chain and then spent 10 years in commercial and sales roles before recently, 3 years ago, joining supply chain for the wonderful challenges that the pandemic and Brexit have presented to us as an industry. I'm going to pass you on now to Kunal.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kunal Demirel. Until the 1st of June, I was part of Migros, and I was leading their branding, media, and data teams. And from the 1st of June, now I'm the managing director of Mimeda, which is the retail media company of Migros, supported by Migros, built up by Migros. So together with Migros, we are going to be giving our suppliers to give a chance to use our data with different media channels to improve all of us marketing positioning. So this is a new day for me as well, and I'm very happy to be here.
So I think that's over to me now, Parisa. So, well, hello again, everybody. So Kunal, David and I are going to spend the next 45 minutes or so reflecting on the impact of COVID on the value chain, how manufacturers and retailers have responded to that, and the extent to which we think some of the changes that we're starting to see are here to stay. So to provide a little bit of structure to the hour, we're going to divide the session into three parts. So we're going to start by reflecting on what's changed in the last year and the impact of COVID that David and Kunal have experienced firsthand in their respective roles. And then we'll move on to explore how companies are responding, but also reflect a bit on the increased importance of diversity in all its forms in helping to drive the flexibility and the innovation that we need to help us respond to our new normal. And then finally, we'll hand back to Parisa, who I think will facilitate some Q&A if we have time at the end. So I'm going to kick things off by summarizing some of the key trends and changes that we've seen across the industry in the last year, and then hand over to Kunal and David for their personal reflections. And what a year it has been. I mean, there is so much, I think, that we could talk about here. But when David, Kunal and I were preparing for this, there were really four key impacts that we wanted to focus on today. And the first of these, as always, is consumer behavior, where I think the impact of COVID has really been to accelerate rather than to fundamentally transform some of the changes that we were already seeing in the way consumers were engaging and interacting with brands. And so the first of those really is the dramatic shift that we've seen towards online. And that's not just leading to new models of engagement with consumers, it's also leading to new models of engagement between employers and employees and between manufacturers and retailers. And I think what I've been really impressed with is the speed and agility at which I've seen retailers and manufacturers amplify their online and their direct consumer propositions, but also start to leverage the multiplicity of channels available to them to get their brands and products into the hands of consumers over the last year. I think we've also seen changes in consumer demographics start to accelerate. Not surprisingly, dramatic increases in the demand for local products and services, trusted quality and secure supply, but also more focus on brands with purpose and moves to more values-based purchasing. And I know that Kunal is going to talk in a little bit about how Migros has started to respond to some of those changes, but just a couple of statistics which really resonated with me. Since the start of the pandemic, consumers are 64% more likely to shop locally sourced products, 46% more likely to pay more to shop in their local high street, and 68% more likely to rank safety as a main priority. So these are shifts in consumer demographics that we as manufacturers and retailers are really going to need to think about how we respond to in the way we market our brands and categories going forward. But what I think has also been so striking about these shifts is the imbalance in supply and demand that we've seen across different categories and channels over the last year. So on the one hand, huge uplifts in demand in areas such as home care and food that have caused some real disruption across the value chain for CPGs and retailers. And then on the other, a really strong decline of consumer demand in other sectors, not just HoReCa and travel, but also personal care products, causing the impacted sectors to have to work really hard and be really creative about how they keep their brands top of mind across the last year. And in response to that, we've seen some real innovation across the value chain. And I know Dave is going to come and talk a little bit more about that, but just some examples that have really reflected with me. I mean, firstly, some of those hard hit sectors pivoting into new sectors to maintain their business. I mean, Metro, don't know if there's anybody on the line from Germany, but Metro, a German B2B wholesaler, very active in the HoReCa sector, expanding their on and offline presence to enable them to capitalize more on the B2C segment so that they can capitalize on that growth. We've also seen some great examples of simplification. So CPG simplifying their SKUs and their range to reduce complexity and enable greater scale. McDonald's, for example, also has offered a reduced menu as they've moved back into reopening so that they can simplify supply and operations. So some really great examples there of how CPGs and retailers have responded. What we've also seen, though, is some really interesting innovations in pricing. So pricing new formats that are more suited direct to consumer, large formats for in-home consumption, and Coca-Cola have been doing some really interesting work there. But also starting to see the purpose agenda appear much more heavily in the way brands are pricing and promoting. So targeted offers and donations, special promotions for essential workers. Patagonia, for example, donating its full VAT refund to sustainability projects. So real innovation, a lot more flexibility, but also greater awareness of the reputation of brands and the purpose of brands in the way we're seeing them being marketed and communicated to consumers. And then the final thing I wanted to touch on before handing over to Kunal was just the opportunity I think that we've seen over the last year to inject much greater diversity and much greater collaboration in the way we go to market across the value chain. So I think we've seen some great examples of correct collaboration, really creative collaboration across the value chain to get products and brands to consumers. But also, I think we've also seen a real increase in the requirement for greater diversity in all its forms, greater diversity of thought, of gender, of experience, to really challenge the sort of traditional ways of working, drive greater collaboration and greater flexibility in the way we manage the value chain going forward. And I think what I'm most excited about is to see how that continues as we return to our new normal and how we bring the best of that into the way we work going forward. So I'm going to pause there and hand over to Kunal, who is going to particularly look at the consumer behaviour point and how Migros has started to adapt to that. Over to you.
Thank you, Claire. Migros has one of the biggest loyalty programs in Europe. We have more than 15 million active customers, which means we can compare our consumers' behavior just before COVID, during COVID, and after COVID. And now I'm going to be telling you about what changes we have experienced basically for the last 2 years. Well, we've seen three different types of consumer behavior. First of all, our consumers start looking after their hygiene as soon as possible. So buying lots of goods on soap, bleach, antibacterial wipes, maybe not in Europe, but in Turkey, cologne, lots of colognes we consume. And also we start seeing the trends of buying food, obviously, to look after their family. And again, paper towels, wet wipes, and washing up liquids, and to clean up the whole house. And we've seen lots of detergents, lots of different cleaning items. For instance, vinegar, white vinegar to clean the houses. So different substances, different products that we never seen or we never heard among our consumers become a topping trend. But one specific product is sold out. We didn't experience any sold out products like the rest of maybe Europe or USA because of maybe we are an agricultural country as a whole. But one product that we sold out is yeast. Because most of the households start to do baking, including women and men. I don't know why, but we just love to bake breads, and that's why we start stock out yeast, which we actually never thought of. And then after we take care of our hygiene, we take care of our family, then the individual looking after it has started, which means that we start looking after our hair, looking after our bodies. So trying to buy products to complement this, and also to look at our immune system, which means most of the vegetables, greens, turmeric, ginger, and also frozen vegetables to make us our immune system very strong and behave that. Obviously, some of these products, it's been consumed, but before COVID, we haven't seen that much focus on this, especially immune system products. But I think during the COVID, we've seen many of the different products that people trying to experience, especially from word-to-mouth products, and especially turmeric and ginger become high on the list for our consumers to consume.
To what extent do you think some of the changes that you are experiencing here are here to stay versus our trends that are more COVID specific?
I think one of the things is that obviously we are a supermarket chain and we are basically a physical company. But during the COVID, we've seen six times our online services become six times increased. And we are sure that our online shopping will be here to stay. And it's going to evolve. I will be talking in a couple of minutes now. And also people will continue to look after their health and their immune system more and more. And now it was a trend. When you ask people, they would all say, yes, I like to look after my health, but they really didn't know how to. But now they know a bit more. And also they start looking at their health as a holistic, not just looking after their body. They also look after their soul and look after their brain. I think this has become a holistic health system for many of our consumers. And we will start providing not only these products and also these suggestions for our consumers, how they can take a holistic approach to health. And now I want to hand off to David.
Thanks, Kana. Yeah, I think, you know, when we look back on the pandemic, I think for all of us, the pandemic was almost a stress test that helped many organizations really see and realize more opportunities within their supply chains. You know, thoughts and ideas that have been around for years, but never proven. You know, they hadn't taken that step. They didn't have the data to suggest that, yes, this is absolutely the right thing to do. Last year and during the crisis, these supply chains had to take that action to stay, you know, relevant with the volumes that were coming through and maximize their operation. Just to give you context, for us at Heinz, you know, we've got a massive, I think it's the largest food factory within Europe, production facility in Wigan. It produces all of our canned products on beans and soup. And, you know, when we looked at this emerging volume that was coming down, we saw it started to hear some of the reports that Kana touched on in terms of stockpiling. We had to make some big, bold decisions. To give you context, we took our range of around about 250 canned products that we currently retail and took that down to 50 key lines during the pandemic. The intention there was it created an additional 30% capacity. We saved time where we normally change labels, change products, change recipes, clean down the production lines to be able to get move from one recipe to another or to move from removing allergens that were previously there in the previous production. Now, that was something we had to do. From a theory point of view, we'd always wanted to do it. We saw the operational inefficiencies of what we're doing, but there's always a reason as to why you keep that range in. But for that moment in time, that was the way we had to respond to it. But obviously for retailers, they saw this. It wasn't something that Heinz did uniquely. It was something that a lot of the supply base chose to do. And you know, when we were having conversations with our retail partners, it was something that they were prepared for. In fact, it's part of all of our business continuity planning. But these challenges, obviously, during COVID also brought costs for retailers. So now when they're looking at their operation and thinking about how do I build a more profitable and more sustainable business, knowing that I've still got to protect my workforce, I've still got to protect my supply chain and the costs and the risk of COVID within it, they now look at their operation and think, okay, well, where can I take space from? Something that was big before COVID, you know, how do we find a way to drive greater SKU rationalization? Has a different flavor now because they've seen the data and they've seen the opportunity for businesses to rationalize their ranges. And they also know because of the description that you know that Claire brought in and Kina brought in terms of new requirements for shoppers and consumers, the growth of new categories, they need to find ways to free up space for them. So that's an ongoing sort of threat and challenge that as an industry, we need to probably flip our mindset on to try and provide for that. Also, you know, typically our big supply chains have been set up for big box, full truck, full pallet, orders to satisfy the big weekly shop. Now, a lot of that is starting to become out of date. We saw acceleration of e-commerce during the pandemic. The queues for most of the online websites to be able to get access. You know, as a business, we also launched a direct-to-consumer e-commerce model as well. But to be fair, we've been seeing a growth in smaller format stores, convenience stores, high street stores, discounters, long before the pandemic. And thinking about how we adopt our big box model to some of these small box needs, I think is something that we now need to accelerate based on the challenges and the differences that the pandemic has brought to us. Now, how do we do that? How do we factor it? You know, for us, because of COVID, one of the big things we saw was real engagement between customers and suppliers, whether that be manufacturers working with their retail partners, whether that's us working back within our supply chain to some of our raw ingredient suppliers or our packaging suppliers to accommodate these volumes. That level of collaboration is absolutely required to satisfy these new challenges, these transformational challenges we're probably going to see as an industry, because we can't solve them in that silos. The level of communication and collaboration is absolutely critical. That traditional asymmetry between buyer and seller has to disappear if we're going to come up with different ways of doing things. And this is where the richness of the human tapestry really plays a part. I think a great example for this for me is Leila Olgren. So she was the youngest and only female engineer at Telia, a Scandinavian telecommunications company. And they were moving from an old model of landline dialing on their phones into a world of mobile phones and what that presents. Now, one challenge that really reared up its ugly head was this idea of on an old landline, some of you may remember it, some of you may not, you used to dial a number first and then you'd get an open line and you'd hear a dial tone. Then you dial the rest of the number and it would connect to whoever you were calling. Now, for mobile phones, particularly when you're on the move in cars, in buses, even you know cycling to work, that doesn't work because you've got a network of cell towers relaying this information across. So if you connect to the first cell tower, by the time you finish dialing the number, you're already gone past to the second or third cell tower and all they're hearing is part of the phone number. It couldn't work in the same way. So Leila came up with this ingenious idea that was very simple. There were microchips in the phones. It was big enough for it to store the information that you were typing in. So let's not open the line until you've dialed in the whole number. Very simple solution. But all the engineers were really struggling with this. And yet she could bring a fresh and new perspective to that conversation. That's called green button dialing. And that technology is fundamental in all mobile phones across the planet. It just shows that the world isn't black or white. It's full of color. And we need to find ways to bring this together. I think the other area that we saw real big changes over the last year is this more existential consumer response to what they've lived through. I think it's been tough for all of us. And they've come out of it with an increased focus on the care and consideration for both the planet, but also for their own health. Whether that's clean label, nutritional information, reduced salt and sugar, locally sourced products, sustainable packaging, full transparency of the products from farm to fork. There are new needs that are present and something that we have to adjust to. And these are big fundamental needs. It requires us to uproot our whole value chain to understand where are we sourcing the product within our suppliers? Who's working in that field? Who's working on that plot of land? So that we've got full transparency all the way through to the consumer at the end of the day. It also requires us to visit age-old recipes to try and find ways to meet these new standards, these new requirements. So it's really going to require everybody's creativity and input. And it's actually these fresh, unique, and different viewpoints that will help us bring solutions to these challenges. Claire, what else have we seen in terms of some innovative engagement across the last year?
Well, actually, Dave, that's a great point. I was actually going to just ask you a question about the end-to-end collaboration piece, actually, before I get onto that. And I'd just like to understand a little bit more about what you've seen change in the relationship between retailers and manufacturers in the last year. And again, a bit like we talked to Kanar, you know, the extent to which you think that is going to continue as we move into our new normal.
Yeah, I think, you know, I remember, forgive me if they're on the line, but I remember waking up to a very, very early morning phone call from one of my counterparts at Asda. I think, and, you know, there's been a huge amount of collaboration through this time and a very sort of collegiate spirit in terms of addressing the key challenges that we've seen. None of the sort of dogma of previous conversations has played into it. I remember, I think it was just when the demand was really starting to rocket. Again, it was Asda gave me a phone call and said, look, we're here to help. We're not asking what the situation is. We just want you to know we're here to help. Let us know. And even last week with, you know, with Morrisons, the conversation is all about with the latest drivers crisis. How can we help? How can we work together to solve this? Rather than thinking about, you know, this is our service level. You've got it. The service level. It's a much more collegiate, collaborative approach in terms of finding solutions. You know, whether that's been looking at each other's network, whether that's been understanding how we can move from one product to another. I think we saw some great examples during the very early days of the pandemic where your competitors, I remember, I think it was Brakes, were supplying beans, food service style packs of beans into Sainsbury's. We saw it at Brexit with local suppliers supplying directly in, I think it may have even been Spar as well, supplying into Sainsbury's to help overcome some of the challenges of Brexit. So I think this much more open-minded, much more solution-oriented approach is much more to the fore now than it ever has been. And I think it bodes well. We've got to build on that and start to deliver some benefit for our consumers as a result of it.
I totally agree. And I think just in answer to your question, I think it's something that really impressed me. Again, some of the more heavily hit channels and categories, repurposing their factories, repurposing their supply chain to support COVID, to support key workers, to support, you know, making the equipment that was needed in order to, you know, to take things forward. So I think some really impressive, again, really purpose-driven ways of engagement, which I think we'll see continued into the value chain as we go forward.
Absolutely.
Okay, Parisa, just move on quickly onto the next slide, if that's okay. So I guess we now wanted to touch on, you're really starting to think a little bit about the model of engagement that started to emerge from, you know, this transformational phase that we've been living through. And again, I think the point here is that COVID has accelerated rather than fundamentally changed a number of the shifts that we were already seeing towards a more flexible, innovative model of engagement between manufacturers, retailers, and consumers. I guess there are three points that I wanted to touch on here before handing over to Kanar to amplify a little bit further. The first of those is, again, how we will engage with consumers going forward. And again, the changing consumer preferences that we touched on earlier will continue to require manufacturers and retailers to really think engagement, pricing, and execution strategies. So more simplicity of offers, a lot of what David was just been talking about, increased pricing transparency, and continued flexibility to service customers across the different channels that they want to engage with us in. I think the second point for me is around the future of work. And I think the point here is that, you know, where we work and how we work has fundamentally transformed over the last year. And I think that digital will continue to support more digital, more virtual engagement as we go forward across the value chain. And I think that can only create opportunities for us as partners. First of all, I think it focuses our face-to-face discussions on the high-value, strategic, important discussions that will really enable us to drive growth in the market and liberates us from the more transactional elements, which actually can be done virtually or can be automated or can be done in a self-service way. So I think there's real opportunities in the future of work to, you know, improve the conversation, the dialogue, and ensure we're engaging on the right opportunities. I also think, going back to the diversity discussion that we had earlier on, that again, this more virtual, empowered way of working can only be a good thing for driving more diverse talent, creating more opportunities for all of us to enter the workforce and to be successful. So I'm really excited about seeing where that's going to go in the future. And then the final piece for me is, I think all of this, you know, can really only happen if we continue to leverage AI and automation to liberate frontline teams to focus on growth. And also we continue to really focus on great quality data and great analytics to make sure that we're really understanding our consumers and customers and developing real insights so that we can really innovate in the categories. And I think some of the points that David made there about, first of all, how we're rationalizing some of our core SKUs, but also the importance of really thinking about how we grow the categories going forward will be really important now. So Kanara, I was just going to hand over to you now, I think, just to talk a little bit more about how Migros is adapting its model to accommodate that.
Thank you, Claire. And just before to continue, I just want to comment on what David has said previously. I think the COVID has also changed how retailers and suppliers look at each other. Previously, we were like two sides trying to get the best, discounts, try to get best trade efforts on retailer side. And obviously suppliers try to give the, as many products to the retailer with the highest margins. But during COVID, I think our suppliers has changed into our partners. So this is a different now way of working, way of thinking. And now all the retailers asking their partners, how we can improve our total business together by looking at data, by looking at different media channels, how we can improve our in-store activities and things like that. So I think we are seeing a different way of having shopping and retailing as well. So I just wanted to comment on what David has said. And I think the winning word for COVID for me is hybrid. So hybrid, we have hybrid education models, obviously hybrid working models. We've seen hybrid consumers, but this is what we experience in Migros. We have hybrid shopping models. Obviously, we had stores, but we don't only have stores. We have stores suited to each different customer segments. For many years, we have hypermarkets, we have small shops, and we have middle shops as well. And for the maybe last 20 years, we have online deliveries. We are the first company who opened up online deliveries. But obviously, during COVID, we've seen a 6-time increase in our online deliveries. But we also have a rapid delivery, which delivers less than 30 minutes to your home. So from the app, you just give your delivery. You don't want to wait for another day or for the next day. Even in the afternoon, you need a very quick recipe. You need a very quick ingredient for your meal. So then we have Migros Quick in English, Migros Quick in English, so that you can have that rapid delivery under 30 minutes to your home. So these are the different ways of deliveries. But we also have a boat, for instance, in Turkey, obviously surrounded by three beautiful seas. And if you come to Turkey during summertime, you can see our Migros boat store, where you can go with your own boat to this store and you can buy your supplies needed from that boat. You don't need to go to a store or you don't need to go to the land to shop. We will find you while you are cruising in your yacht. And again, during the COVID, we invested in our kiosks. So some of the time, the stores were closed for the pandemic reasons, but the kiosks are open 7 days, 24 hours a day. And that means that our customers can get their needed supplies for themselves or for their families. Not only the shopping models have changed, but also collection style have changed. We have a hybrid collection robot, which we call Taro, created by Turkish engineers. Taro basically is a combination of a human and a machine. Well, a human is driving that machine at the back of a store designated for our online deliveries. But the robot actually shows the goods to the person who is picking up. So it is to minimize the level of time needed for the collection of the goods. So things like that, where the human and the robotic automation is combined, is going to be very efficient in terms of online deliveries or rapid deliveries. So as I try to summarize, we have more than 6 different models where we use hybrid some of them created before COVID, but we've seen a different increase or number of increases during shopping models during COVID, and now it is here to stay.
Yeah, I, if you don't mind, I love the boat. Next time I'm on holiday in Turkey, I'm going to use my rubber rig and swim out there to get some food. But I worked quite a bit in e-commerce prior to this role, and when I compared the food industry to some of the other industries, particularly consumer electronics and other industries similar to that, actually the level of participation online is really low, even with what we've lived through in the last year. Do you think that's always going to be slightly behind those other industries, or what do you think it is that keeps people coming back to stores?
Yeah, exactly. Food online delivery, before the COVID, it was less than 1%. And it's now around maybe maximum 10% all around the world. And we ask our consumers why, you know, why don't you, you know, do online delivery? Somehow they just want to get this fruit in the store. They just want to feel the smell. they want to smell the bread. I think all these senses of smell, hear, noise, all five senses are within a food store, retail store. I think that's why we keep on, our consumers want to come back and make them relax, because really food buying is a way of relaxing your mind.
I think it's fascinating, isn't it, Knarr? And I think, again, if you look at the way some of the food service and restaurants have responded to that, I think, you know, they've sort of really tried to capitalize on this, you know, desire both for shopping locally, but also, as you say, touching, experience, sourcing the food that you're eating. Yeah. And so they're turning, you know, they've started to transform and pivot from restaurants offering bundles, selling goods, selling great quality food. And that's another way I think that they've drived and sustained that themselves during this time. It's interesting.
And in my next slide, I just want to summarize. Obviously, there has been a shift in customer loyalty models. People always ask, you know, is there an end to customer loyalty programs? And I keep on saying, no, actually, you know, customer loyalty is a huge concept that will always remain. But the tools and the systems are going to change. Our loyalty program, for instance, is now all-time high, the percentage that our consumers use, because many families now need more opportunities to shop in a better opportunities to save on family budget. That's why loyalty programs are popular, and it's going to be popular as well. But there will be changes. Well, I just want to summarize three changes. The first one is customization. We all talk about customization, but it's not really done very well. I don't know why, but it's the way it is. We try to tend to always do mass campaigns, but we no longer have these budgets. Our consumers don't have that level of attention anymore. So we need to customize as many times as possible for our consumers. And in terms of customization, we've been doing customizations for now more than 20 years now. But during COVID, we start another scheme where we ask our consumers to pick up the campaign that they wanted. So they choose the category, they choose their spending level. And we said, okay, for that spending level, we can give this level of points back. So it's a win-win situation where our consumers actually decide what they need, how much they can spend, and then we say, okay, for this we can give this. So this is the collaboration, like, you know, how we collaborate with our partners, and this is how we collaborate with our customers. And the second one is subscription modeling. It's now huge all across Europe and USA, especially USA, but we will see more and more subscription modeling loyalty programs. For instance, we have Money, the biggest loyalty program. And for free, you can get so many advantages for Money. But now we launch Money Gold, where you pay 10 Turkish liras, and then you get online delivery for free. And also you get more individualized campaign for yourself. So you only pay a little amount of money to get extra credit or extra advantages from our loyalty program. And the gamification, it is again something we talk about a lot, but it's something that we never actually apply to loyalty programs. The more we use gamification functions in our loyalty program, like giving challenges, motivate our consumers. And then, when they do the challenge, give them something to be proud of. And then the loyalty programs are going to be really fun to be engaged with. And it will create a really good engagement point for our consumers and for the retailers and our work partners as well.
Now, a question just from me on the whole area of customization. You also touched on it in your hybrid model, customization, I suppose also the trends towards personalization and so on that we're seeing. And I guess also the shift from consumers towards looking at more locally sourced produce. Do you see any challenges around maintaining your scale? And I guess the corresponding risks around fragmentation with the way things are working at the moment?
Exactly. Actually, no, Claire. Actually, what we've seen is that we're now looking at our locally produced partners and to get, well, Migros, obviously a retail place. So, and because we are watching our consumer behavior all the time, we've seen that shift as well, that people are, want their locally produced products. And also Turkey is a very locally produced country. So I think we have this challenge for many years. And so what they want, we provide them. So we collaborate with, especially with women communities now who's producing their own products. We are trying to teach how to make good supplies, how to, increase their branding, how they can produce in a quality way. And then once they do, we actually get these to our shelves. So it's not a challenge, actually. It's a very welcome challenge, by the way. It should be. And there are many locally people within our community, they are producing this and they want to sell. They are trying to sell online, but if they collaborate with Migros, then they will, they will distribute to many stores. So we make collaboration with this type of working partners nowadays.
Fascinating. And David, I guess a sort of similar question to you. I mean, you touched on before, I think the rationalization that you've really focused on in the last year and some of the benefits I think that's afforded you. Where do you see that's going to go as you go forward? I mean, you've got a core range now. What's the implications of that for innovation? I guess, what are the opportunities and also the challenges in that area for you, do you think?
I think it's been a real insight into, I guess, some of the challenges that we created ourselves from an innovation point of view in the past. I think we've always struggled to innovate around the core. And a lot of that is because we are using the sort of the mass template of our Heinz beans, our Heinz ketchup, as our benchmark in terms of how we expect things to perform. And ultimately, our supply chain and our operations aren't quite designed for that. What it really proved was some of these flanker SKUs don't necessarily offer a huge amount of incrementality. They're great for offering more choice to the consumer, but not necessarily increased consumption. The reality is then we have to pivot and then think about, okay, where are these new category opportunities? And it's really encouraged us to be bolder in taking more risks in areas that we haven't played before. So, at the time of the pandemic last year, actually, we launched our new ventures team. So they are independent of any of our categories, and they are entirely driven by the consumer insight that we are getting from our insights team, from our marketing teams, to try and come up with stuff that is more relevant and connected to what people want right now. But what we're trying to do is throw out all of the old rules of the game and find ways to say that, look, the way we've tried to innovate before hasn't worked for X, Y, and Z reasons. What we're going to do now is focus on driving this consumer need in niche categories, but at least accept and recognize that and build a supply chain to respond to that. And I think it's a really big, bold step for us to take, but it's absolutely what we need. And if anything's proven that, it's really been the consumer response to what we've witnessed and experienced over the last 15 months.
Thank you. Parisa, I think over to you, Q&A.
All right, thank you so much. It was super exciting. Let me shortly close and be able to see all the panelists. I really appreciate It was a wonderful session, very interactive, very interesting to see how the full value chain is connected. And more and more we get the confirmation that the problems that industry has, companies are not managing in silo, and they really do it as a sort of collaboration with all the partners. Let me ask one question we have from Angela related to hybrid channels. She's asking, given the hybrid channels, there's added complexity and some loss of economies of scale. Has this meant you have increased your workforce size in some functional areas? This is for Kenna.
Yes, exactly. Especially on online deliveries during the COVID, we increased substantially. We took 10,000 workers, partners again to our workforce. And the funny enough, this announcement also made huge headlines and created much more fuss than any other thing that we've done. Especially in online deliveries and rapid deliveries, yes, we increased our workforce. On the others, though, we didn't reduce any our workforce because shop are all the hybrid models. Our other models were also, all the other stores were also opening up during the COVID most of the time. And so we didn't do any reductions or anything for the other employees. But yes, for the other, for new hybrid models, we increased our workforce.
Thank you. I have one question here, maybe first a bit my reflection. When we look at the impact of COVID on economy, some people really lost income. So, and we see a sort of recession to come, or if we wouldn't say we are already there. And this obviously reduces the affordability of people to buy food and anything they need. So we need to have products more that are on the affordable price. At the same time, we saw people didn't go out, but they want to have a restaurant experience at home and even cook niche and fancy products. Other example was parents working home and having a home office. There was no time for food. What is the good food and convenience to really have short and quick for themselves and for children? So looking at that, I believe there has been lots of opportunities that come through COVID. Anything you would like here or elaborate or share from your own experience, what have been the newest opportunities or something that really surprised you related to COVID that really showed a new market or business areas?
Yeah, happy to jump in on that one to start the ball rolling, Parisa. I think, if I'm being very candid, I think we're still in the middle of it. I think that's the reality. What we've witnessed and experienced the last 15 months, you know, it's a very old analogy now, but this idea of Tale of Two Nations. There are many who have had the good grace to be able to be in a stable job, have not been able to go on holidays, have not been able to ease out, and they are in a financially better position than they've been before. And you know, they're waiting for the food service industry to reopen and go and eat out and experience some of the good times that they've missed for the last 15 months. And then you've got others who have been, you know, really sadly affected by this. You know, they've lost their jobs, they've been on furlough, that income has been a challenge for them. So there are those emerging needs, and like you described, some of the ongoing challenges. But it's only really when we start to return to a level of business as usual, not necessarily what we experienced before the pandemic, but what that new environment's going to look like before we'll really know. What that means is, as organizations, whether it's big retailer or manufacturer, we've got to be very quick to stay in touch with insights and data to drive the right behavior and make sure we're reacting to the challenges as we see that. And also encourage the feedback, you know, we need everybody to speak up, be connected with their consumers and understand what's happening. And again, it's only through that that breadth of understanding will we really truly be able to react. Anybody want to come in on that?
Can I give two examples commenting on what David has said and Paris asked? we created a line for home meals, which might be a better trend, especially seen in UK, but it wasn't a trend in Turkey. So we created affordable home cooked meals so that people, after some time, sick of maybe ordering food online and they really getting sick of cooking by themselves. So they really wanted an alternative, but they also wanted to be healthy alternative. So this line that we created now is quite popular, especially for the white collar employees, I say, because they are working from home, they don't have time to cook. And one thing that becomes a hit is this kind of meals, quick meals, healthy meals. And the second one is a completely different example. We have a digital TV where we put our recipes with the food that you can, ingredients that you can buy from Migros. And we have this digital TV you can watch on YouTube and on website for many years. But during the COVID, all the TV channels were, closed down because they didn't have any access to the new programs. But through this digital channel, we start doing concerts, live concerts. And all of it, in a quick time, our channel became really hit among our consumers. So they were able to get access to a different kind of content. So now our channel is now a really media channel that we can actually collaborate with our partners, like Unilever, like P&G or Coca-Cola, where we actually create interesting content for the consumer.
What you're offering is more than product, actually, no?
Yeah, I mean, I think David's spot on. I think that there are some great examples over the last year of, I think, much more responsible behavior across the value chain. And I think certainly, you know, efforts to really protect and serve some of those segments who, you know, have been struggling. And I think, you know, quite interesting, when I talked about purpose-based pricing earlier on, I think, you know, certainly looking at some of the work Amazon even have done over the last year to really look at pricing and remove products from sellers who are violating pricing policies to really sort of start to protect. But I think I also agree with David in the sense that, you know, as we go forward, we'll only really understand how we can truly innovate if we really focus on the data, we drive the right insights, and we continue to collaborate across the value chain, because I think only in that collaboration can you really meet those needs effectively.
Thank you. I've got two more questions, and still we have some minutes to answer. One is from Cecile asking us, what has been the most innovative part of your company's supply chain responses to COVID?
Gosh, there are many, many different areas that we can talk about this. You know, to give you some context, this time last year we had roughly three times our operational capacity of orders. Almost four times our average capacity on our orders, and we had to find ways to adjust to track the data to manage it, manage our comms. We'd never even understood what it was for one day, and we had to do that for 6 weeks continually. The incremental growth to Heinz UK as a business in grocery last year, when you look at the top 100 brands, we moved from sixth to fifth. But if you consider just that incremental business alone, that was the 90th biggest brand in the UK in the grocery market. So we had really substantial growth, and that doesn't include the impact. You know, we were mandated by the government to support their care packages. Obviously, naturally, we wanted to do it, but we had to play our role in that, which was almost 20 million units. And we made donations of 12 million meals through our Magic Breakfast partnership. So we were incredibly challenged as a business. I think the way we were able to work with some of our supply base to secure, you know, a lot of the products we deal with are crops. So being able to secure the right level of tomato paste, the right level of navy beans to keep the business running in itself was a challenge. And we ended up having a very dynamic hand-to-mouth type of approach from a production point of view. You know, typically we're not used to this as supply chains. Supply chains are always described as swans. They seem very relatively calm on the surface, but underneath there's lots of furious, you know, flapping and peddling as we encounter different issues. You know, inbound supply issues coming in from the container ships, production performance issues, oversales and customers. But normally you don't see any of that because you've got stock and you've got safety stock. Throughout most of last year, we had no safety stock at all, and it was literally hand to mouth. And I think trying to find ways to cover that and improve the communication, we weren't perfect, but that required a huge amount of innovation for us in terms of data and tracking. And you know, like we touched on before, collaboration. I think we're much more connected now as an organization internally, as much as we are externally, than ever before.
Thank you. I think you almost answered the next question, David, that comes from Beatrice, asking similarly to the impact that COVID had on the relationship between suppliers and retailers. I wonder whether you have also seen changes in the way that different functions like supply chain, sales, work with each other, and if there was changes there on the internal interaction.
Yeah, I'll give a headline and I'd love others' viewpoint as well. It's very funny because we were fortunate to an extent that because of Brexit, we'd already determined our business continuity plans in the event of a no deal. So the minute COVID hit, probably ourselves and every other big supplier in the country used that to implement their business continuity plans. Like we had a step on because we prepared for Brexit. Now, the reality is everything we did as an organization, and you know, I've had the benefit of speaking to many different peers, but also people within other organizations through the interview process for the last year. And all the big organizations did the exact same thing. Why? Because it's in the textbook. This is the theory. You rationalize, you increase your output, you put allocations in when you're out of capacity, the managed fair share. You never lose sight of the consumer. And that was the approach we went through. The reality is, though, the textbook doesn't tell you the rest of the story. And if I was ever to write a textbook, it would be one book, one chapter on this is what you do, and it would be nine chapters on, and then this is how you manage it. Because to give you an example, we made some big choices to increase our outbound capacity. We removed case and layer pick to be operationally more efficient. But I then had to go and meet members of parliament to describe why I hadn't provided to local wholesalers throughout the rest of the UK the opportunity to order from Heinz. They order once every 6 months, they order 300 cases. And at that time of crisis, we needed to find a way to staff for that crisis. So I think the shift in importance of supply chain was a fundamental last year. I think from a historically been a function that was largely invisible and nobody wanted to be part of, perhaps, to something where everybody wanted to share their opinion and very quickly became experts in it, perhaps. That was a real interesting approach. The nice thing that has happened is when we now think about some of these retailer engagements and these conversations, they're no longer there's a commercial conversation and there's a supply chain conversation. It is now there is one, I like to call them 4D conversations. You know, representation from both sides in one same meeting to drive this collaboration and drive this engagement together. I can see Claire nodding as well.
I think David does the supply chain a little bit of a disservice there. But I think that certainly for me as a consulting in the consumer goods industry, you know, which has historically been very siloed in its approach. So sales does sales, marketing does marketing, supply chain does supply chain. And again, it comes back to this point. I don't think it has fundamentally changed. I think it's accelerated some of the shifts that we were already seeing. And certainly that shift towards much more end-to-end transparency from supply to demand generation and vice versa, and how we need to absolutely work together to drive speed to market, to be more agile, and to get the right products into the stores and into the hands of consumers. I mean, that's something that I certainly have seen clients across the industry really work on and shift the turn the dial on over the last year, I think.
So thank you so much. I think we're running out of time to continue the discussion. And let me just quickly share again my screen and move on to this slide. I want to ask you to stay connected. You can stay connected. We have wonderful network, as you see, industry, to get connected very casually and use the experience and best practices. And the next one is about our annual event, which this year is also virtually. The conference is 6th and 7th of October. please come to our website, have a look on. We have wonderful programmers every year, and join us for these 2 days. And last, really thank you very much to David, Claire, and Kenna. It was amazing, really insightful, and really, really great to have your input and insight related to the topic that we had today. Thank you so much, and thanks for joining us, everyone. Please spend 1-2 minutes time after this session. You receive an email, give us feedback. We love to hear how you thought about it and take it along with us. So thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.